Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble, on Instagram at @RedRock_Beeble, Facebook.com/RedRockBasketball, and the email address RedRockFantasyBasketball@gmail.com. So, the first two rounds of the playoffs are done. The daily podcasts are now finished because there is no more daily fantasy happening. So what we're going to be doing in these podcasts is just looking back and your sort of evergreen podcast you can listen to today, over the next week, whatever it is. Just reviewing each team individually, seeing what sort of trends we can uncover heading into next season, help you out with dynasty leagues, keeper leagues, decisions you have to make, that sort of, in those sort of more in-depth fantasy leagues, and just sort of a heads up, an early sort of thing to start thinking about for your leagues next season, and also just some fun discussion about the teams in the NBA, because I know that if you listen to this podcast, you love basketball, you love the NBA, you love the way that teams work and roster construction and all that sort of stuff. So we're going to cover a fair bit of that stuff, plus answer some of your questions throughout the podcast. Today's podcast, we're going to be doing the Minnesota Timberwolves. At the time of recording, the draft lottery has not taken place. So the Timberwolves have got the best chance at landing the number one overall pick. Obviously, what they do with whatever pick they get, whether it's one, two, or three, whatever pick that they do gets going to influence a lot of the value of some of the guys on their team. If they take a big man, if they take a point guard or a shooting guard, it's going to affect a lot of things, plus trades and free agency. What we're looking at more now is what happened last season. Assuming a roster stays relatively intact, what we can partially expect from some of these players moving forward is obviously going to be, as I said, a lot of flux. And as we head into September, later in the year, we'll do team preview podcasts when we've got the trades and the free agency and the draft all sorted, and we can really get nuts and bolts into teams that way. As I said, we're covering the Minnesota Timberwolves today. The format of these shows is probably a little bit loose at this stage, a little bit up in the air. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how this first one goes, get some feedback from you guys, something you'd like included, more or less of things, whatever it is. Enough of the rambling. Let's talk Minnesota Timberwolves. So the Timberwolves, we all know how the offseason went for them, the big Kevin Love deal that netted them two number one overall picks in Andrew Wiggins and Anthony Bennett. They pulled a number of trades during the season. They got the Kevin Garnett deal in exchange for Thaddeus Young to the Brooklyn Nets. They also traded Mo Williams and Troy Daniels. They went to the Hornets. Gary Neal came back from the Hornets in that deal. They got Adrian Payne from the Atlanta Hawks for a first-round draft choice. And they also made a deal where they traded Corey Brewer to the Houston Rockets in exchange for Troy Daniels, who I mentioned earlier was traded to the Hornets in that Mo Williams deal. They also sent Ronnie Turiaf in a deal to the Philadelphia 76ers. So a lot of that stuff, it's not really all that important. There were some big names in there. Obviously, Mo Williams is a big deal. Corey Brewer is a big deal. Kevin Love is obviously a massive deal. Kevin Garnett and Thad Young, they're all important pieces. But they've all changed hands now. What I'm going to do, or the way I'm planning on looking at this, is going through sort of position by position. Got some questions that have come through from you guys as well, and I'll attack those questions when we look at those position groups, talk about some salary things with the players, what their status is for the upcoming offseason, and go from there. I think the best place to start with sort of thing is by looking at the point guards. The Minnesota Timberwolves, as they're currently constructed, they've got two point guards on their roster, three if you count Lorenzo Brown, he's sort of a point guard, but Zach LaVine and Ricky Rubio are the two point guards for fantasy purposes that we really need to pay attention to. Now, Brown had definitely had his moments because of all the injuries that Minnesota had. They had Rubio out, LaVine missed time, Mo Williams missed time when he was there, so Brown, there was a couple of games where he played all 48 minutes. Now, Lorenzo Brown has got a team option for next season, yet to be seen whether the Timberwolves pick up that option. But LaVine on his rookie scale contract, Ricky Rubio is the first year of his rookie scale extension, so he'll be getting paid $12.7 million next year. So those two guys are locked in as the number one and number two. I think it's fair to say that that Zach LaVine was a surprise. We'll start with LaVine. I think it's fair to say that Zach LaVine was a surprise this season. When he was drafted late lottery, I didn't know what to expect from him. I thought, yep, the guy's athletic, and I know that. I don't know whether he can be a legitimate NBA player. Can he shoot? Well, not really. Can he score? Can he run a team? And we saw that when he was forced into action with Rubio down, and then when Williams got traded, he was really good. He actually put up some decent numbers. And we can look at his rankings through different parts of the season to really see that when pressed into action, LaVine was a guy that had to be owned in fantasy leagues. We look at his total value for the season. So this is taking into consideration the whole year, not just the times when he was the starter, not the times when he was the backup. The whole season, he played 25 minutes a game, but he came in ranked at 157th. Now, in general, the rankings I'm going to give you are going to be head-to-head rankings. 157th. That's really good. So you're talking borderline 12-team ownable, you know, most of the season, if we're looking at it, you know, across the season. Now, you wouldn't have owned him at the start of the season, and everyone should have owned him at the end of the season. His rotisserie ranking, though, he was actually a better roto player than a head-to-head player. He came in ranked 138th in my roto rankings over the course of the season. Again, towards the end of the year, he was playing bigger minutes and everything was coming together for him. Now, say that the last month of the year, he was a top 50 player, the 49th ranked player in the last month in head-to-head value. That's really impressive. I don't think many people would have anticipated Zach LaVine being a top 50 guy, but that's just what he was like towards the end of the season. Post All-Star break, the last 2 months of the season, he came in at 114, so still pretty solid value. And Rubio played some of that time. He played about 12 games post All-Star break. LaVine was on the bench, then started the rest of those games when Rubio was shut down for the season. So LaVine's an interesting player. Now, Rubio should be back to full health. The ankle should be fully healed after this off-season. I don't imagine there's any lingering effects from it at all. And we'll get into Rubio in a sec, but it's going to impact LaVine's value. Now, I said his head-to-head value came in at 157th for the season. What that means for him, I think, is that if Rubio plays the whole season, he's going to end up having a worse second season than a rookie season. He'll get better, but his opportunity will be less. Yeah, he'll be the primary backup. Mo Williams won't be there. It remains to be seen what they do in the draft, but he's not going to get 25 minutes a game. He might get 19 minutes a game. He might get 20 minutes a game, but he's not going to get 25. So the improvement in his numbers and his percentages, especially because he's shot only 42% from the field. 34 from three was okay. 84 from the line was impressive, but 42 from the field was not that great. And you think that would improve, but also his touches will go down. His minutes will go down. So LaVine is not going to be a guy that should be on standard league radars next season. Dynasty or keeper leagues? It's hard to say because he is in this situation where he's behind Rubio. Now, is Rubio an injury-prone player? I wouldn't put him on that label. He did an ACL. He had a severe sprained ankle. I don't think that they're signs of injury-prone players at this point in his career. I don't think we've got anything to worry about with Rubio moving forward. So it's going to leave LaVine in a backup role for at least the next 2 to 3 seasons. To me, that puts his dynasty value fairly low. Now, if someone's looking at what he did at the end of the season and offers you a good value at a top 100 player, or at a top 100 player who's maybe a bit older, who's only going to be top 100 for the next 2 seasons, I reckon I'd take it because I don't think that LaVine is going to be a player who in the near future is going to be able to get these big minutes that he got down the stretch that enabled him to be a top 50 guy. Is that going to happen in the next 2 to 3 seasons? I think it's pretty unlikely unless the Timberwolves go, we're trading him away, or they pick like a combo guard in the draft and he becomes expendable. I don't think his dynasty value is that high. Now, it all depends on how deep your league's going, but I don't imagine he's a top 100 dynasty player at this stage and for the next 2 to 3 years. I think he'll struggle to get into that range. But as I said, his numbers were impressive. The 157th ranking head-to-head and 138th roto is good. The numbers post-All-Star in the last month are really impressive as well. But when you look at his numbers, he didn't stand out. I ranked everyone in their per 36 numbers. So everybody who played over 15 minutes a game in the NBA, you expand their numbers out to 36 minutes. LaVine came in at 194. So that means he wasn't putting up, look, he's only playing 25 a game, but if you take it out to 36 and you take everyone else out to 36, his numbers don't come in and look that impressive compared to everyone else. There's a lot of guys that he's better than, a lot of guys that he's also worse than. So I think that his future is a little bit murky to me, and that end of season run that he went on, and he was great. And if you're trying to sell him in a trade to someone, you can use those numbers. Look what he did. You can use the Rubio injury prone argument against someone else. Hey, Rubio's injury prone. Look how much time he missed this season. He's had an ACL injury. He can't shoot. He's Levine's the way of the future, blah, blah, blah. You can sell someone on that and sell them, and look, he was a top 50 guy the last month of the season. You might be able to get some assets back, a decent draft pick, a top 100 player. I see Levine's numbers regressing next season. Now, the other point guard that we need to talk about, obviously, is Ricky Rubio. Now, he was a guy that I targeted heavily in leagues. I had him in about two or three leagues because I went almost exclusively with a punt field goal percentage build in a lot of my leagues, and he's one of the best players for that. The problem was that Ricky Rubio didn't play many games. He only played 22 games for the season. And a lot of those games, well, some of those games down the stretch, he played limited minutes. So he only ended up playing 32 minutes a game. He gave us 10 points, 5.7 rebounds, 8.8 assists, 1.8 steals. They're great numbers. The problem is he shot 36% from the field. He shot 26% from three. Those numbers are putrid, and that's why to target him in a head-to-head league, you really needed to be punting that field goal percentage, because that's he dragged it down considerably. Now, even though his field goal percentage was low, he came in head-to-head total 273 because of the games played. Roto, he came in at 290, so obviously a worse Roto player. That's pretty straightforward, but not significantly worse. The thing we have to look at Rubio is, per game, 36th. 36, that's really good. And then when he came back from his injury, post-All-Star break, 22nd, even better. Look at his numbers per 36. Said he only played 32 minutes. He's the 19th best player in per 36 numbers. He's going to go underdrafted next season, but you have to have the right setup, and it's obviously too early to go and really look at my draft strategy much for next season, but I think that punting field goal percentage is still going to be a great way to go, because there's going to be so many people who are going to be onto the punting free throw percentage thing with guys, like we had Drummond in there already, we had DeAndre Jordan, there's Dwight Howard, but then we had Derek Favors emerge as another punt free throw percentage guy, Nerlens Noel, a punt free throw percentage guy, Rudy Gobert, a punt free throw percentage guy, Hassan Whiteside, a punt free throw percentage guy, and all those guys are going to be high on people's list. They're going to take them in second rounds, third rounds, fourth rounds, and that's going to mean that if you're looking to build a really strong punt free throw percentage team, it might be hard to get exactly who you want because everybody's going to be looking at it. And that's the way I approach this season. But I think it's even more so with the emergence of Gobert, the emergence of Whiteside, the emergence of Noel, adding to this batch of guys who can't shoot free throws that well. So zigging while everyone else is zagging and going punt field goal percentage, Rubio will be an underrated guy. As I said, we look at his numbers per game, 36th. It's impressive. And yeah, around that fourth, I reckon you'd be able to get him probably in the 50s. I reckon he'll slip to the 50s because people will be like, I'm not dealing with that field goal percentage. And that's fine. But the idea of punting field goal percentage is you're not dealing with it at all. And that's where his value starts to come in. And I think if we get a full season from Rubio, he's going to be fantastic. He was awesome. He was putting up such good numbers before the injury. And even when he came back, he was great. He was a triple-double. I think he got a couple of triple-doubles or at least one triple-double this season. He gets the steals. He doesn't hit threes, but he has big rebounds, big assists, big steals, decent points. He has tremendous value in that particular build. So he'll be an underrated guy. And again, we're looking at Dynasty Keeper League value. He's just come off his rookie contract. He's not old. I know he feels like, well, everyone's known Ricky Rubio for 10 years, it feels like, but he's not old. This is he's starting his fifth season. His new extension has kicked in, $12.7 million this season. Levine is not going to be overtaking him anytime soon, if at all. So Rubio, I think, is going to have suppressed value in a lot of people's minds. The other guy that I mentioned, point guard, Lorenzo Brown, he came in and did some decent stuff. He was okay post-All-Star break, came in ranked 199th. In the last month, he was 144th. That's pretty impressive, but again, he's going to be stuck as the third guy if the Timberwolves pick up his team option. Now, his numbers were okay. 4 points, 2.5 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal in just 19 minutes. Those numbers are okay. They're not horrible. And on a per 36 basis, he comes in 133rd. We look at Levine's numbers. He comes in at 194th. So what Brown was able to do in those limited minutes was actually more impressive overall than Levine. And that's something that if they run into injury problems again, and say Levine goes down or Rubio goes down or one of those guys goes down and you're in a deeper format, Brown then becomes a guy who takes on 20 minutes a game and becomes an interesting type of player. He was marginally better in head-to-head leagues than Roto. But overall, his appeal is, I'd say it's pretty limited. I think that's probably the best way of putting Lorenzo Brown. But when the opportunity arises, he's someone that you can't discount because he did put up some pretty decent numbers, and his per 36 numbers came out relatively impressive. Now, a question came in from Justin Fielkow, my colleague at RotoWire, who's on Twitter at jfielkow. How do you envisage them using both LaVine and Rubio at the same time next year, given their poor shooting redundancy? I think they will use them together minimally. They will cross over. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think you might get 10 minutes of them combined max, though. Maybe 5 minutes. I don't think you'll get much. Now, Kevin Martin is locked in as the team shooting guard. We know that he is always a guy that is on the trade block. Now, he's not a free agent. He's got 2 more years of his contract left that's going to pay him over $14 million total for the next 2 seasons. That's not untradeable. That's a really decent contract for Kevin Martin, who is a very, very impressive player. A great scorer. He can handle the ball some as well. Just really injury prone. Superb shooter from the line. 3-point guy as well. He's going to be the starting shooting guard. The other thing that Timberwolves have got, Chase Buttinger, which I'll talk about soon. He came on really strongly at the end of the season. He can play some small forward. Wiggins can play some 2 as well. So it's not going to be a situation where Martin comes off. Levine's going to be their only option at shooting guard. They've also got the chance that they might be in a position to draft, say, D'Angelo Russell or Justice Winslow or someone like that who can play along the wings and add an extra body in there too. So I think Levine playing next to Rubio is not something that's going to happen all that often, because you're right, the shooting for both of them is bad, and you can't have 2 guys in the backcourt that can't shoot at all playing together. So 5 to 10 minutes a game max, I would say, and that's going to be something that plays against LaVine for standard leagues, is that he's not going to get out there and play dual point guards like Mo Williams and Ricky Rubio were able to do. And we saw Mo Williams do that with Kemba Walker, and there's a number of situations with dual point guards playing. Brandon Knight, Eric Bledsoe, that sort of thing. I don't think LaVine and Rubio is a combination that's going to work that way. Flip Saunders may see things a little bit differently to the way I do, but I don't think that's a really realistic situation they can get into. Gary Neal was another guy who played some guard or some point guard for the Timberwolves. Now, he's an unrestricted free agent. He came over from Charlotte. His season was okay. He was great in the last month. He came in ranked 71st. But depending on where he signs, his value is going to be limited. He's going to be a bench guy, a 20-minute guy. He's a deeper league 16-team category or 16-team sort of guy, maybe. His per-game value for the season, though, 304th. That's not great. And that's buoyed by that last month where he came in ranked 71st, which is fantastic. But overall, his whole season was not impressive. So that doesn't really leave much from him. He averaged 10 points in 22 minutes a game. He gives you nothing else, 2.5 rebounds, 2 assists, a 3 a game in that 22 minutes, and some relatively poor shooting as well. So Gary Neal, don't know if he'll be back in Minnesota, but his value is... It's definitely not ideal. He was also a guy who was a better roto player last season than head-to-head by about 40 places as well, so that's worth considering, even though he wasn't a great shooter, shooting only 37% from the field. And he's another one you put in there with Rubio and LaVine if he was to come back, that another guy who just can't shoot, and that's going to make it hard for them to have all 3 of those guys next season. I feel like that's going to be not a complete impossibility, but pretty close to an impossibility, I'd say, for those 3 to coexist. That's the best way of putting that. All right, point guards, done. Let's talk shooting guards. Now, I didn't know whether I'd classify Andrew Wiggins as a shooting guard, but let's do it. Let's classify Andrew Wiggins as a shooting guard, and let's talk Wiggins. Now, a question, of course I was going to have some questions about Andrew Wiggins, but here's one that came through from Jeffrey Zhao. What round do we take Wiggins? It's a very good question. I'm not going to answer that just yet. I want to go through some numbers and what he was able to do last season to give us an idea of what he was able to do. Okay, so Andrew Wiggins played every game and played a lot of minutes. He played a lot of minutes. As a rookie especially, for him to actually survive that long, playing 36 minutes a game, 82 games, was extremely impressive. Almost 17 points, 4.5 rebounds, a steal, half a block, 2 assists. 44 and 76 is his percentages. They're pretty good numbers. He was mighty impressive. I was very impressed with Andrew Wiggins. He came in ranked in head-to-head leagues, 73rd. Better in Roto, 53rd. That's a great season from Andrew Wiggins, so 53rd. But if you look and you bring it back, that a lot of his value was based on the fact that he played 82 games. So his per-game value is 129th. That's a drop of 56 spots. His per 36 numbers, which is basically he played 36 minutes, he comes in ranked 315th. That's a big drop off. So a lot of his value comes from the fact that he played every game and he played big minutes. Now his minutes aren't going to be reduced. So that's not something we need to worry about. Now, could injuries strike? Yeah, of course, but it could strike everyone. But it's important to know that a lot of these high numbers, I say, yeah, look, Wiggins was 73 and 53 in Roto, that a lot of it came from the fact that he did have the perfect storm in terms of minutes and health. The other thing we saw with Wiggins is just big swings in what he was able to do. Start of the season, struggled. Then when everyone got injured, no Rubio, no Mo Williams, no Kevin Martin, no Nikola Pekovic. Then when Wiggins was the only player of any talent on that team, he took over. He was a top 20, top 30 type player. They all came back. He went to a guy in the hundreds, 110, 120, that sort of value. Not that great. It was very up and down. Now, post All-Star break, 95th. The last month, 78th. So I think that's 70. That's obviously where he's ranked for the season. He was very good at some stages, not so good at other points. Where do we take him? I think the answer is that people are going to take him well before they should. Okay, look at his head-to-head ranking of 73, his per game of 129. They're going to come down. Assuming he plays 82 games again, I think that's going to come down because his shooting will improve. His ability to get block shots, I think, will improve. He'll start to hit some more threes, which he didn't really do at all. And I think his distribution will improve as well. He'll start giving maybe an extra half to one assist a game maybe we'll get from him. He definitely does have a great fantasy game once he gets it going. Now, he's a very realistic chance to be a top 50 player next season. To take him in the top 50, it feels probably a little bit risky to me to take him in the top 50. I don't hate it. I don't think it's completely out of the ordinary or completely a bad move. But again, they could be bringing in a guy like a Justice Winslow, a D'Angelo Russell, a Emmanuel Mudiay, or someone like that who's going to also take the ball off him a little bit as well. And yeah, maybe Wiggins will be in there as more of a plus defensive sort of guy, not necessarily an offensive playmaker, because that's not necessarily his role all the time. I think we'll find that he gets overdrafted considerably. I know he's the Rookie of the Year. He wasn't the Fantasy Rookie of the Year. There's no way he was the Fantasy Rookie of the Year. He is going to get overdrafted some. I think you'll probably have to take him somewhere. I reckon you'll have to take him in the 40s. That's my guess. Now, it might even have to be earlier. I think 40s is probably safe. Now, in terms of dynasty and keeper leagues, you're not going to be able to get Wiggins off whoever owns him. You're going to have to give up a lot. You're probably going to have to give up a top 10 type player because that's the sort of hope that people have for Wiggins. Unless someone says, nah, I don't see it for this guy and is willing to give him up. If no one is offering Wiggins around and you're offering a deal for him, you're going to have to offer up big. And I don't know necessarily whether it's going to be worth it. We definitely won't get it from Wiggins next season. I think year three is probably the time where we see if he does develop into a top 20 guy, that'll be the situation or when it will occur. But back to that question from Jeffrey about when we're looking at drafting him next season. I think that if you want him, you're going to have to take him inside the top 50. I'd say that would be the most likely landing spot for him based on reputation, high-flying, dunkness, all that sort of stuff that people see from Wiggins. But it's important just to temper the expectations a little bit with those numbers that I mentioned, that 315th in per 36, 129th in per game, and a lot of it coming from the fact that he played big minutes in every single game. Just a huge, huge rookie load. Not saying there's going to be a sophomore slump, but if there's a stretch of 10 games missed or he drops his minutes to 35 or something, it's going to be a little bit off, even though some things will improve. I think that the likelihood of him finishing ranked between 50 to 60 is high, but I reckon you'll have to draft him inside the top 50, maybe even the top 40. The other shooting guard, Kevin Martin, I touched on him before. Another season wrecked by injury for Martin. He had that issue with the hand, which also with his wrist, but somehow played through it, dropped a massive game on the Knicks, I think it was, and then sat out a huge amount of time, played just 39 games, still averaged 20 points and almost two triples a game. He averaged 2.3 assists, which is more than Wiggins. I think that's worth noting. When you look at what he was able to do, Kevin Martin, and we think of Kevin Martin as a scorer, he averaged less than one rebound a game less than Wiggins, more assists a game than Wiggins, and just 0.2 steals less than Wiggins. That's important to know that he's a scorer, but the other numbers that we see there, it's not that big a difference. And that's why when I look at the per game value, Kevin Martin comes in at 59th, Andrew Wiggins at 129th, because he averaged 20 points. He hit two threes a game. He hit his free throws at 88%. And there's other things, there wasn't a big difference, but he was just such an elite three-point shooter as well. Now, I mentioned before, he's not a free agent. He's got 2 years left, $7 million for each of the next two seasons. Then he becomes an unrestricted free agent. The contract is very tradable. It's very tradable, and I wouldn't be shocked to see him get dealt. But for now, he will be this team's starting shooting guard. I can't see them... Well, you know what? Maybe he's not their starting shooting guard, but he's playing 30 minutes regardless. He's playing 32 minutes regardless. Flip Saunders does like him a lot, thinks he offers a lot to this team. We saw him come straight back after the wrist injury and play big minutes again and put up big numbers. So there's no really concern with that. I said 59th per game. The last month of the season, 45th. After the All-Star game, 73rd. That's when he came back from the injury. So there was no reduction in his form. There was no way giving other guys a go. He came back and he did exactly what he needed to do. His per 36 numbers, 87th. That's impressive because, again, he had played limited minutes and those numbers were so similar to Wiggins, plus he scored more. So Martin was definitely the better fantasy player than Wiggins on a per game basis, but again, Wiggins' value inflated by those games. Now, Martin is always an injury risk, so you're not going to take him that high next season. But just when you get to the 80s and the 90s, he's always worth a pick because the last four or five or six picks on your team, you're not going to have them on your team by the end of this, by halfway through the season. Yeah, I've seen people who draft the team and end up with two guys from that team at the end of the season. At the end of it, if Martin ends up playing 80 games, it is a massive win to pick him in the 80s. Huge. Because he will be a top 50 player. If you pick him in the 80s and he plays 80 games, he's a top 50 guy. If you pick him in the 80s and he plays 30 games, then it's not so much of a big deal because you just drop him and you move on to someone else. When you're picking down there, it can pay off big. It can bust, but you could have got so many great players off the waiver wire this year. And that's what happens. If Martin gets injured, you drop him and you pick up someone like Rudy Gobert. You pick up different players, obviously Hassan Whiteside, all these guys who were available. Zach LaVine down the stretch. Andrew Wiggins would have been on waiver wires at certain points of the season. So the potential is always there for him to have a big season. The problem is he just doesn't do it because of the injury factor, and that has hampered his ability throughout basically his whole NBA career. The other guy who I've got listed as a shooting guard, who is probably not a shooting guard, he played some small forward, he played some power forward, and that's Shabazz Muhammad, whose rookie season honestly was a write-off. It was horrible. He looked completely out of his depth. Now, in that similar stretch where Wiggins started taking over this team when all the injuries were happening, Kevin Martin was down, Chase Buttinger was out, Nikola Pekovic was down, Ricky Rubio was down, Mo Williams was down, Muhammad was playing big minutes and putting up big numbers. The problem with him is he is extremely one-dimensional. Well, maybe he's not one-dimensional. He scores. He scores a lot. He averaged 13.5 points in 23 minutes. That's good. That's like a 16, 17-point scorer if he plays starter minutes. He doesn't really hit threes. He gets rebounds and a stack of offensive rebounds, which is one of his strengths. He averaged 1.7 offensive rebounds out of his 4.1 rebounds. That's a really good number for a guy who's a shooting guard. One assist a game, half a steal, 0.2 blocks, 72% from the line, but a whopping 49% from the field. And that's not something we saw from him in his rookie season as well. So he was great for a stretch, and then he went down and his season was over. But don't let him fool you into thinking he's a great fantasy player. He gives you a ton of points, the most sexy of fantasy stats, and he gave you some decent rebounds at times, and that's about it. Total, 317th. Yeah, and that's to be expected. He played 38 games. Roto total, 286th. Not too bad. But we get to per game, 235th in head-to-head. That's not good. It's not good at all. He's per 36, 241. And Where's the opportunity for him this season? Wiggins isn't going anywhere. Martin's not going anywhere. Buttinger's back for another season. There's a chance that the Timberwolves take another wing. They could also take a big man. There's not a big opening for him to go in and get 29 to 30 minutes and put up 16 points and 7 rebounds and nothing else. It's going to be a lot of injury-dependent value for Shabazz Muhammad. I don't think he's worth taking in standard leagues whatsoever. He's still got 2 more years left of his contract. Rookie deal, so he's obviously going to be around and he's going to be an interesting piece for them moving forward. But his fantasy value to me is limited to those situations where there's minutes opening up and he's going to play 35, 36 minutes, big minutes, and he's going to score and he's going to get a nice field goal percentage bump. He's going to be a great player in an offensive rebounds league. And that's about it. Don't be too suckered in onto Shabazz Muhammad because, again, he was one of those players across that December-January window when everyone was like, oh, Shabazz Muhammad, we've got to get Shabazz Muhammad. Shabazz is out for 2 months. Do I hold him? And people were willing to waste a bench spot on Shabazz Muhammad for a long period of time. And that was something that just it didn't make sense to me. And, again, dynasty leagues, there has to be an opportunity for him to get these minutes. And with Wiggins ahead of him, it's going to be hard in that position. In the front court, Gorgie Jeng's there. Kevin Martin at shooting guard. Again, it's not for a couple of years. I don't think his value in dynasty leagues is all that high. He'll get better again. He went from disgusting, right off bust in his first year to a really, really decent NBA player, a nice backup, a guy who can lead the second unit in scoring and be a go-to guy down in the post, who improved his shooting percentage a lot. And it should still improve again in his third season. But does it improve to a situation where he's a top 150 player? I think that's doubtful. He definitely should crack the 200s. He was 235th this year in per game. I think he gets into the 200s and plays a steady role at 20 minutes a game as a backup. But I don't think that there's going to be big minutes for him in the next 2 years. I just don't see his value. If you're playing a 14-man dynasty, I don't know if there's much there. 16-teamers there is, but I think his ceiling is probably a guy that's ranked 120th. I think that's probably his ceiling. I don't think it goes much higher than that. Again, I'm projecting years and years in advance here, and it's hard to do. I don't necessarily see it with Shabazz. Let's move on to the small forwards on this team. And, you know, I classified Wiggins and Muhammad as shooting guards. They're probably small forwards in all reality. Wiggins will play the 3 and Martin will play the 2. The only other two guys I've got listed as small forwards on this team are Chase Buttinger and Robbie Hummel. Now, Robbie Hummel, I don't think we need to spend a huge amount of time talking about Hummel. He's a restricted free agent this season. The Timberwolves would have to offer him a qualifying offer. Even if they do, there's not much to talk about with Robbie Hummel. He was ranked 345th. I was looking at the wrong number. 345th in per game value. He had a couple of big double-doubles that would have been great if you used him in daily fantasy leagues. But overall, his value, his injury proneness, it's just not enough for any sort of league. You have to be talking deep, deep, every single player in the NBA rostered for Robbie Hummel to have any value. Chase Buttinger's the interesting guy. His total numbers don't look great. 248 for head-to-head, 230 for Roto, 282 per game. That's not great. But let's drill it down a bit. Post All-Star, 144th. Last month of the season, 70th. He definitely improved what he was doing. Now, again, it was without Shabazz Muhammad. And he did it a lot of it at the end when there was just no one around. Gary Neal was out. Ricky Rubio was out. It was basically Levine, Wiggins, Buttinger playing nearly all the minutes in the 1, 2, and 3 positions. But he definitely stepped up. He just took on his player option a couple of weeks ago. He's a $5 million player option and he becomes an unrestricted free agent. So it's a contract year. But contract years, they're a little bit overrated in terms of what players do. You'll see the numerous examples of players having contract years and then guys in the last year of their contract being absolutely shit. So yeah, that's great. You can cherry pick lots of examples. Yeah, Kyle Lowry, Trevor Ariza last season. Then you can also go, okay, Rajon Rondo this year. It happens both ways equally as much, and it's not something that's ever worth really paying attention to for fantasy leagues, I don't think. But Buttinger is going to play some minutes. He's going to get 20 minutes a game, I would say. That would be my guess. Again, drafting is dependent. He played 19 last season, 6.8 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist. That's not that special, but it was what he was able to do when he got some more minutes down the stretch that definitely made him look like, yeah, this guy, after all these knee injuries that he's had, he's finally healthy and he's putting together a really impressive run, and that's exactly what he did. His numbers were super impressive towards the end of the season. So Chase Budinger, that rank of 70 for the last month of the season, it's misrepresentable. That's not a word. That's not the word I'm looking for. It's not real. That's basically what I'm trying to get at. He's not going to be a top 70 guy next year. He's not going to be a top 150 guy, which he was after the All-Star break. I just think that with the other guys ahead of him, Martin, Muhammad, Wiggins, then Rubio and LaVine, plus a potential draft pick, that's a number of guys. Look, he's going to get 20 minutes, but he's not going to do much more than that. And the ceiling for him is pretty limited. It's not as high as Muhammad's. If you're looking in a dynasty league, Muhammad's going to have more value than Budinger, even though Budinger's probably a better option for next season. It was good to see him play that well, and maybe he gets a better role on a different team, whether it's a trade this season or as a free agent next season. But I think his opportunities in Minnesota to put up decent numbers are going to be relatively limited because of these other guys in that position. And they're going to want to go young. They're going to give Wiggins and Muhammad and Martin the majority of the minutes over Budinger. While he'll still get 20, that's not enough for most fantasy leagues to go, yeah, I need to deal with this guy. And even dynasty leagues, it's a little bit hard to rely upon him, I think. Now we're going to move to talk on the front court, the Minnesota Timberwolves. A couple of questions came in here regarding the front court situation. Look at Nick Anthony's one first. He's on Twitter at NickyTons14. How will the power forward situation turn out next season? He says, i.e. Kevin Garnett, Anthony Bennett, Adrian Payne, Justin Hamilton. It's a very good question, Nick. It's, and at this stage, obviously I can guess. Now, Kevin Garnett is an unrestricted free agent. All signs point to him coming back for one more season, which seems ludicrous to me. He was not good. He couldn't play any minutes, and he's not going to have much in terms of his fantasy value. Anthony Bennett struggled again in his second season. He showed more signs definitely than his first season. Wasn't great. Adrian Payne looked good at times. The Timberwolves gave up a first-round draft pick for him, which could end up being costly for them depending on how they finish, but they obviously thought highly, but he was too in and out of the action. He mentioned Justin Hamilton as well as an option. Now, Hamilton's a guy that he was good at times, but he's not the building block or the future of this team by any stretch. He put up some pretty decent numbers. This is why I think that if they get the first pick, they're going big man. They're going Jahlil Okafor. They're going Karl-Anthony Towns. Now, whether those guys can play alongside Gorgie Dieng, they probably can. Now, Dieng played a lot at power forward when Pekovic was healthy earlier in the season, and he was developing more of a longer-range shot. And so I think working with one of those other guys like Towns, like Okafor, is definitely something that the Timberwolves can look into. But if they're picking, say, at 3 or 4 and both of those guys are gone, then they have to look in a different direction. How does it shake out? Well, I think they'd love to get Bennett in there and have Bennett playing 25 minutes a day. He was injured a lot this season again, not as bad as his first season in Cleveland. He played 57 games. 15.7 minutes a game. So 16 minutes a game, 5 points, 4 rebounds, half a steal, still shooting the ball terribly, 42% and 64%. And that's 2 years in. You're going to want him to take a big jump. Third year is often the time when players take a big jump. Now, can he do that? I don't know. His fantasy value was terrible. 346th in head-to-head, 314th in roto, 381 in per-game value. Now, the last month he picked it up, 216th. That's an improvement, but it's still not good. He's not going to have relevance, I think, for standard leagues this season. Now, we saw that Thaddeus Young got traded away. Kevin Garnett barely played when he came over, but Bennett still couldn't really get a big role for this team. We saw Payne getting the minutes. We saw Hamilton getting the minutes. We saw Arinze Onowaku getting minutes, who I'll touch on a little bit later. Dieng played some minutes at the four as well. Bennett just couldn't get it going. And you have to think that, is this guy just an all-time bust? I was confident he'd have a decent season if he got the minutes. And I still think that if he does get some minutes, he's going to be okay. I'm losing confidence. His per 36 numbers are not good. For a guy getting so few minutes, he wasn't able to actually produce in that time. 321 was his ranking in per 36 value. That's not very good. The only thing I can say positively for him is that Adrian Payne, the other guy there, he was ranked 336 in his per 36 value. Not good also. The last month of the season, Payne 286 for this, you know, total for the season, 377 and Roto 356. So we're not talking good guys here. Now, Payne would have one good game out of four or five, not enough where you could rely on him in any sort of 12, 14, 16 team league. He was the domain of 20 team leagues, and that's about it. Again, they must see something in Payne. They see something in Bennett. They've invested the first round pick in Payne. Yeah, Bennett came across in that Love deal. What do they see? It's going to look, Payne's going into his second season. I think that he is going to see a dramatic improvement. I wouldn't be shocked if Payne becomes the better player than Bennett this season. He probably, you know, already was last season based on what they were able to do. And we definitely saw more big games from Payne than we saw from Bennett. Garnett, on the other hand, just doesn't play enough minutes. His per game, his per 36 numbers are superb. 61st. He ranked in per 36 value. But he's never going to get those minutes. He's just never going to get up to that level. But he is still a relatively useful fantasy guy. He didn't play one game in the last month of the season. Again, injuries and just, what's he there for? Just to signify that he's back in Minnesota. His total value for the season, 227th. Given that he missed all those games, that's great. 231 for Roto, so basically the same sort of guy in both formats of leagues. You don't draft Kevin Garnett in standard leagues, despite the fact that he was 61st in per 36 value, or that he was 151 in per game value. If you're in a 12-team league, you're not drafting him. If you're in a 14-team league, you're not drafting him. If you're in a 16-team league, yeah, maybe I could see that, but he's going to get 20 minutes. He's going to be playing a mentor role. He might be in a situation where he's behind Bennett, behind Payne, behind Gorgie Jing, behind Towns or Okafor. He's not going to play a huge amount of time there. That's if he even comes back. So the power forward position is definitely a mess. I think the best guy there is going to be if they draft a big guy and Gorgie Jing will play some power forward. I think that's the best guy or the best option that the Timberwolves are going to have at that position. Let's transition onto the centers and talk about Gorgie Jing as well as the other centers that are there. Declan Makerskill, who's on Twitter at Undersized Hoops, is Peck's contract untradeable? And what does that mean for Jing's growth? Well, let's look at Nikola Pekovic's contract. It's pretty close to untradeable. He's got 3 years left at $12 million each year. So 3 years, $36 million left. For a guy that's just had Achilles surgery, who basically can't stay healthy, he played 31 games and only 26 minutes a game. He was absolutely putrid. And not just because of the injury, because he just wasn't good. He was never a great fantasy option anyway, because he doesn't provide you with anything. He doesn't give you assists, he doesn't give you steals, he doesn't give you blocks. He gives you points and he gives you rebounds. And even this season, he didn't even give you field goal percentage. 12.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, great. Less than half a block, 0.6 steals, 0.9 assists, 42% shooting as a center. Now, the 84% free throws is great, and that's not something you expect, and low turnovers, but overall, just not good from Pekovic. His total value, 313th. His per game, 171. So that's when he was healthy. His per game, 171. Yeah, you don't want him in 12s. You don't want him in 10s. You don't want him in 14 team leagues, basically. He's borderline in that situation. And even if you look at his numbers per 36, because he played low minutes, 26 minutes a game, he goes out to 216. So he wasn't that good in that situation anyway. Is he untradeable? 3 years, $36 million left for a guy that if he gets 50 games, it's a miracle. It's untradeable. I just don't know what they're going to do. They can't move him. Nobody is going to want to take that on. Unless there is an idiot team out there, Los Angeles Lakers, that might want to take on that deal. What can you get out of him? I think the Timberwolves have to go, you know what? Okay, he's our backup center. He plays 15 to 17 minutes a night when he's healthy. They have to go with Gorgie Jing at that position. And Jing was maybe not as big of a star as we saw in that little patch that he had at the end of his rookie season, but he was impressive still. He ranked 46th in overall value, 43rd for Roto League. So about the same you're getting in both. Per game, 51st. So that's about right. He's the 50th best player. Post All-Star break, 39th. The last month, 35th. And that was without Pekovic there, without Garnett. Then when he's taking on more of the role, the numbers really, they really ramped up for him. Now, he was drafted probably 10th, 11th round last season with the hope that, yeah, oh, Pekovic is going to go down. I think that you go early on him again this year. Now, I don't think I take him in the top 50 because we don't know what Flip Saunders is going to do. Is he going to go out there and play Pekovic instead of Jing, which is ludicrous, but it's definitely something that can happen. But I think you're going to have to take Jing inside the top 100. I think that he has got top 50 potential written all over him for the next couple of seasons. I think there's a lot there. Now, does Pekovic impact Jing's growth? As I was asked by, who was it again? By Declan. Does it impact Jing's growth? Maybe slightly, but I think at this stage, they're just going to go, Pekovic is done. He can't stay healthy. These legs are shot. If he didn't have all his money coming to him, I reckon he'd probably retire. If he was a free agent, I think he'd be like, you know, I'm done. I can't even walk on these things. It takes him 9 months of the year to rehab everything. And just sitting down, I reckon he'd be close to retiring, but $36 million probably pushes him in a different direction. I don't think there's going to be much impacting Jing's growth. I think Jing is going to play decent minutes, 30 to 32. Again, it depends on what they do with their draft. But I think they've got to resign themselves to the fact that Pekovic is a backup from now and that Jing is the future at this position. He was really good this season. Again, not as big as we saw him last season, but almost 10 points a game, 8.5 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, 1.7 blocks, 51 and 78 as his percentages, and that's great. Oh, they're great big man numbers. Now, the points aren't huge. The rebounds are good, but we get him up to 12, 13 points a game, which is definitely possible. Over a steal, 1.5 blocks, they're really good numbers, and Gorgui Dieng is a potential top 50 guy. I think, again, I'm not taking him in the top 50, but I think that when we're looking at dynasty-type value, I think you place a top 50 sort of premium on him. I think that that's where his value is. He's a 50 to 60 guy for the next 3 to 6 years, I would say. There's a lot to like with what he's been able to do, and I think that he's only going to get better as well. I see he's only 2 years into his career, so he is only going to get better. The other guy, Orienzo Anuaku, signed at the end of the season, put up some okay numbers at times, but we don't really need to be paying too much attention to him. And Justin Hamilton, who post All-Star was the 81st ranked player. Now, he suffered some issues with migraines that caused him to miss time where he really could have put up some big numbers when we had other guys ailing at that time. But does he keep playing for this team? That's the other question. Because as far as I'm aware, that his contract is up. He doesn't have a contract anymore, so he's going to be a free agent by my understandings. He signed with Miami earlier in the season, cut by them, signed with the Timberwolves. So he could go anywhere. When he plays, and when he plays big minutes, he's a decent fantasy option. He can hit threes, he can get rebounds, he gets blocks, he can score. There's a lot to like about him, and he showed that with those numbers. That 81st ranking post All-Star break is really impressive, and it wasn't a fluke. He did it consistently. The problem was the injuries to him, and then what's his status for next season? I don't think he's got much in terms of dynasty value or any sort of keeper value for Justin Hamilton. That's it. That's the Minnesota Timberwolves covered. Let me know what you thought. Let me know what you thought of this sort of format. Is there anything you want in there differently or to me to cover in a different way? I did have one other question that came in from CC Elliott, not directly related to the Minnesota Timberwolves, but I'll answer it now anyway. And CC writes, in general, I'd like you to talk about your view of shot attempts and minutes played in making your rankings. Thanks in advance. Okay, so CC, when I do my rankings, I'm assuming you mean like my preseason projection type rankings, it plays a part. Now, I do it all by breaking down projections for each player and then ranking that with a mathematical system to see who comes out on top based on their value in all the certain categories. And minutes is huge. Minutes is a big thing. Minutes is one of the biggest things in terms of determining someone's fantasy value. Pace is also a big factor to the coach, and shot attempts is a big factor for certain things. It's a big factor for their field goal percentage, it's a big factor for their scoring category, and it's a factor for their 3-point percentage or for their 3-pointers made category. It doesn't affect rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, anything like that. So minutes is huge. A guy gets 34 minutes a game, he gets 28 minutes a game. It's massive. It is a huge difference. We're talking like a 20% difference in their total output. And that's big. So when I have to look at these rotations and go, okay, how many minutes is this guy going to get? How many minutes is this guy going to get? It's huge, and it's a lot to do with opportunity. Like, the guys might necessarily be good, but you know, if the Sixers draft a point guard in the top four, that guy is going to have a massive opportunity. Who's he got to go against? Ish Smith and Isaiah Cannon. He's going to be a guy that is going to get a chance to handle the ball, and he's going to be possibly a top 50, top 60 draft pick, and I wouldn't be steering clear of him in that sort of area. Now, a lot has to come to fruition for all that sort of stuff to happen, but it's to do with opportunity and positioning and minutes. And usage is another one that's important as well, depending on who else is around. But shot attempts are important, but they're more important for determining the impact that someone's either good field goal percentage or poor field goal percentage has. If someone's a poor field goal percentage shooter, the more attempts they have, the worse their ranking is. And conversely, if they're a good shooter, the more attempts they have, the more that improves their overall value. But it doesn't affect every category. Minutes, though, do. They affect every category. With the, I know what, they do affect the percentages as well, because the more minutes you play, the more volume you take, and the more that impacts it either positively or negatively. So shot attempts, they're a hard one to do to try and distribute shot attempts. You look at guys, okay, what sort of situation are they in this year as opposed to last year? Will they take more shots? Who else is around them? How many shots a game does this team normally take? Does it all balance out? It is something that plays a part in it as well. But minutes is the major thing. So it's a bloody long process trying to work out guys' rankings and how I see them going forward from last year, regressing, minutes improving, you know, if they're getting less of a role, all that sort of stuff, because that plays a huge part. Because the other thing you'll see with players as well is you'll see a lot of their numbers, their per possession numbers, are very similar after they've been in the league 3 or 4 years. Generally, it's pretty similar, and it all comes down to how many minutes are they going to play and what's the pace of the team. So if their per position numbers are basically the same, it's how many minutes they play and how many possessions a game does each coach like to run. And they're the two things that have probably the biggest impact in more established players in what they're going to do. So it's a good question, CC. I do appreciate that. Again, let me know your thoughts on the first of these team preview or team review podcasts. The Minnesota Timberwolves going to be doing some more of those throughout the week. Get your questions in. I'll definitely have it on Twitter. I'll have it on Instagram. I'll have it on Facebook. And you can let me know if there's anything you'd like to know about the next team that we're going to be covering. And that team is going to be, unfortunately, the New York Knicks. So let me know if you have any questions about that. You know where you can get in contact with me. Make sure you're still subscribing to the podcast and leaving reviews and rankings if you haven't already done that. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.